Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson. I hope your software privacy policies have been adequately researched and agreed to, and any outlying grievances under comfortable investigation with an appropriate local litigator. One man whose grievances are as irrational as they are insatiable is my beautiful co-host, Mr. Ian Morris. How are you this week, sir?
That's probably the best intro ever, because yeah, actually you're right, I am full of grievances and they are irrational, so I'm good, I'm full of irrational grievances, thanks for asking.
That's okay, I'll continue to ask these things. I know that you know, as we were discussing earlier, 14 years of working together in some form,
You've pretty much got me nailed, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. If you're one of our Patreon supporters, this is your extended ad-free version of the show. And thank you to patrons, including Duncan Bowers, Jeff, and Charlotte, who support us directly. For the price of a cup of coffee or a handful of Cadbury's Freddo bars, you can join them, get access to our full-length ad-free show, listen and chat with us as we record live, and get our Patreon-exclusive show Extra Message. Find out more at patreon.com/UK Tech. Well, it was a very quiet week for UK specific tech news, but the figures for how many people worldwide are disabling advertiser tracking features on their iPhones is definitely worth some attention and analysis, I think. I didn't check this in advance with Ian, but would you agree with that?
Yes.
Excellent. Let's continue. As a reminder, Apple released iOS 14.5 a couple of weeks ago, and in it, by default, apps that want to track your usage for advertisement purposes, like Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, Pinterest, Twitter, pretty much all the big ad-supported apps, they have to now explicitly get your permission up front to do so. Potentially even worse, though, for advertisers is that there's also an option for iPhone users to block any apps from even asking, meaning it's a blanket no, you may not answer to all apps when you first open them. The first couple of weeks have revealed just how many people are choosing this latter option. According to analytics firm Flurry, Flurry Analytics, 95%, about 95% of iOS 14.5 users worldwide are choosing not to even let asks. So not to even let apps ask permission. That's pretty staggering, I think. I mean, the expectation was always that permission rates were going to be low, but we're really looking at a tiny, tiny number of people who are proactively saying, yes, this is okay with me. Facebook, yeah. I mean, Facebook, let's be honest, Facebook's always going to be the case study here because it's got nearly 3 billion active users and about 99% of all of its money, all of its revenue comes from advertising. So any small impact to the efficacy of the ads that it shows its users can and have, in some instances before now, resulted in large drops in revenue for certain things. Now, in reality, because there's been a lot of talk about this, and I've tried to find some good figures on this, in reality, only about 15% of all people who use Facebook on a mobile device do so from an Apple product, from an Apple mobile device, that is, iPhones or iPads. Whereas 80% access from Android. Plus, of those 15% of people, not all of them are going to be running the latest version of this. However, the impact has been enough to make Facebook dangle a keep the service free as a reason to allow tracking. It's one of the things that it mentions when this pop-up first appears. And this is really significant because it suggests there may be room in the mind of Mr. Zuckerberg for an ad-free version of Facebook, which makes money by subscription instead of advertisements. Now, there are two factors that I think reinforce why this could be beneficial before I throw these to you in. One is that subscriptions to software and apps and services it's proved to be wildly popular. We do have subscription fatigue, but there's a reason they're so popular, because they work. The other reason why this could be beneficial is that Facebook's user base tends to skew slightly older than some of its bigger rivals, and thus maybe has more disposable income to pay for a clean or cleaner social media experience. All of this is conjecture. However, I'm curious what you think about this, Ian.
Well, they're not actually going to charge, are they? No, I don't use Facebook.
Well, they could charge. Mark Zuckerberg, I remember him saying, I think it may have been in when he was testifying in Congress, I think he said that there'll always be a version of Facebook that's free.
Yeah, I mean, I'd actually really support it charging. I think Facebook would be a lot better of a company if it did have a paid option. And if that paid option excluded literally any way for them to make money any other way. Like zero advertising, a chronological timeline only, no inserting of news of any kind into it, literally just a feed of your friends, nothing else. I think that would be a Facebook worth paying for. You know, connect with your friends, stay in touch, see what they're up to, literally nothing else. You know, maybe marketplace if you want it, but, you know, nothing else. Or groups as well if you want. But, like, you'd have to join them and blah, blah, blah. So that's fine. But, yeah, I think that there's a real market for a service like that. That's all anyone wants, really. They just want a collection of their friends in one place where they can sort of feel like they're up to date. I mean, they don't understand perhaps that that's a myth and that you don't need that. And, well, I suppose you do, but ultimately, what's the point of having people that you're so remotely connected to that you can't just text them and ask them how they're doing?
I think if Facebook ever did offer a ad-free, paid-for subscription service, my gut instinct is that it would still want to charge. It would still want to collect the data.
Well, it wouldn't be allowed to.
Well, it would if you gave it permission to.
Well, it would, yes, but I wouldn't say that would be reasonable. I would say that. Ultimately, you're quite right. You're absolutely right, because Facebook is irredeemably bad. There is no possible way that company is going to bring it back from the edge. It is a horrible company, and I will dance upon the ashen remains of it when it goes, because it disgusts me. The amount of information it tracks, the trail of destruction it leaves behind you as you weave around the internet, people just don't realise. And it's sickening, frankly. You know, I mean, I remember reading about when Apple first implemented a ban on third-party tracking I think it was Safari. And Facebook got around it by changing how the tracking cookie worked. So basically, they had their own first-party tracking cookie, which was on pretty much every site anyway, because they all use Facebook like buttons. And then one of the other cookies, the third-party tracking, passed data to that thing, so they still knew exactly who you were when you were going. But you know, between that and location services and all of the other things they know, you know, all of the tracking, it's despicable. And if you sat someone down and explained it to them, they'd be mortified, I think.
I mean, in a way, the fact that 95% of people eligible to say, no, I don't want you to track me, have opted for that. Like, I think that is decent evidence that people aren't generally happy with it.
Well, and Apple makes it so easy. And, you know, I mean, I don't know if mine was on by default, but it was on. Don't track was on.
Mine was on too.
Yeah. So, you know, really, they've just hit the nail on the head. And it's brilliant. And it's exactly right. No one is arguing that advertising isn't an important way of making money online. And, you know, and Facebook is free. So it's obviously going to use data. But its overreach is spectacular. And this sort of passive-aggressive little note that it sent people, I got it as well. I reinstalled Instagram, in fact, just to get it, because I'd sort of stopped using Instagram. I kind of like Instagram. It's all right. But I'd sort of weaned myself off it and was sort of disinterested. I installed it back on because I wrote about this story as well. And sure enough, I got the message and I was like, lol.
I didn't get it because the first time that I opened any app that can ask for this, I think I'd already pressed.
Yeah. I turned it back on again, I think. I switched it to per app, I think.
I mean, I have no objection to services making money and free ad-supported services. I mean, they've done very well for most businesses online. It's certainly been essential to most of the companies that I've ever worked for. And a lot of it is about choice. But one of the main reasons that I don't use Facebook is because of the data being collected. And so the process, or rather the potential for Facebook to have a paid-for model that shows you no ads, doesn't necessarily fill me with confidence that it wouldn't be tracking me in case I ever cancelled that subscription and wanted to, and then Facebook needed to immediately target me with relevant ads, which again, if you agree to it, I have nothing, you know, no problem with it, but I'll vote with my usage. I just choose not to use it. But I do think there's a market for it because a lot of people don't care about this sort of thing.
Yeah, and yes, they don't, but they should. And if it was explained to them properly, I think they would.
Maybe.
I mean, if I said to you, right, I'm going to... I've got a shop, and as a result of you coming into my shop to buy something that's heavily discounted, I'm going to follow you around for the rest of your life, writing down everything you do. Would you think that was reasonable?
I'm not saying that's reasonable. You're preaching to the converted. That's the reason I don't use many of these services. It's why I don't use WhatsApp. It's why I don't use Instagram.
I do use WhatsApp. I'm just a massive hypocrite, really.
I use Instagram through the web. Mostly, because I almost exclusively use it to follow other people's things. And when you're in the browser, you get no ads, and you can control the trackers a lot better.
Yeah, but it is a horrible experience as well. It's terrible online. I mean, let's be honest, Instagram's not great anyway. This is an image-focused service that doesn't know how to handle images.
What are you on about? It's great. It's great through the web. It's clean, it's fast.
They're nice. Rubbish quality. The tiny little images. It's supposed to be a showcase of photography.
No, it's not. It's so you can take pictures of your doctored face and get people to tell you how much they like your new eyeballs or whatever you've had done. It's not for photography. If you want to go for photography, you go to 500 pixels or something.
Yeah, I mean, all right, fair point. But, you know, it feels to me like it should have been better at photographs than it is. It's not even good for photographs on a casual basis, really.
I don't know. I agree with you on a lot, but I think, you know, Instagram as a product is... It's pretty. It's a decent service.
Yeah, it's fine.
Through the web, not through the app. Anyway, point is, I think that the market is probably right for services like Facebook. And obviously, we've only talked about Facebook here, really, but this is true of so many services. The market is ready for versions of these products that are ad-free and nice. I think an interesting test of this has been Apple Arcade, because it's recently added a whole load of games that were previously free to play but monetized with micropayments and in-app transactions and all that sort of thing and timers to wait for things to happen. They've got essentially made premium versions of those games with all the in-app payment stuff stripped away, and those games are just so much fun now because they're really, really addictive and fun to come back to every day or every week or whatever, but it's not asking for your money. And that, to me, if you like those sorts of games, there's a lot of value there. I could absolutely see that value in a Facebook, in an Instagram. Imagine Instagram, £2 a month but no ads. Even if it was tracking you, I think a lot of people would like it. And I reckon it'd make them a decent amount of money.
The problem is we've seen
the amount of money that the ARPU, as it's called, average revenue per user, and it would probably need to be more than a couple of quid a month.
What is the average amount?
It's around $10 or something.
But
I think it might be a year.
Well, then £2 would easily cover that.
Let me have a quick look at this. I didn't plan on getting quite this in depth.
No, but I think it's interesting. I mean, it's better than talking about the same old thing over and over again, isn't it? I mean, you know, I think what Apple's done, I'll fill the gap. I think what Apple's done is really good. I can see why Facebook's annoyed by it. I can see why Facebook thinks it's entitled to that data. And I think that you're right. You know, people don't care. And maybe it is a good compromise for a lot of people. Like, you know, Facebook knowing where you've shopped is perhaps not the world-ending scandal that I think it is. But I like the fact that Apple is... Because Apple products are so expensive, you know, the iPhone is not a cheap product. Therefore, the fact that it offers these services where you're not a commodity, I think is very reasonable. Now, okay, you could say that that's fine in the context of Apple's ecosystem, but now it's branching out into affecting other businesses. And obviously, there is a big court case going on at the moment where questions are being asked in general about Apple's attitude. Now, I have no problem with it. I think Apple is on the right side of everything, and I neither think that 30% of revenue is particularly ridiculous, given that it's a standard amount. But, you know, this is the thing. You're paying for a premium product. Apple's attitude has always been you're not a commodity as a result of that. So that's a good thing.
In the third quarter of 2020, so this is like the autumn of last year, Facebook's average revenue per user, I was pretty close, $7.89.
A year?
Per quarter.
A quarter?
Yeah.
So it's about
£20 a year.
So, yeah, so a few quid a month and they'd make that money. Make it £3 and they'd make more money. But, you, of course, you'll never get around. It's like... But, you know, Facebook gets out of the ad market. That means there's more ad market for everyone else. So it gives a boost to other sites. Like, you know, part of the problem is that Facebook dominates advertising sales along with Google. There are really only two players. I know that Apple sells advertising in the App Store that's worth quite a lot of money, but it's still only $1 billion. I know that's only, but and projections have suggested it could go up quite substantially. Which, again, I don't think is necessarily the right thing. I think, actually, the fact that Apple promotes paid apps or apps that have paid is a bit weird. And it seems kind of unlike them. So there is an argument to be made that they should stop that. But, yeah, why not charge? I'd rather use fewer services and enjoy them more. I mean, I suppose I should take a leaf out of my own nonsense and pay for YouTube, because I am getting sick and tired of the adverts on YouTube, which are now completely unskippable and impossible to block.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And I think a lot of people have done that, and they're very naggy about that. The YouTube ads, very naggy, but I think it does work. And I think it is quite valuable. I don't subscribe to it at the moment, but I have subscribed to it in the
past.
Yeah,
I keep thinking about it, and I think the argument for YouTube would be better for me if I was perhaps going to switch away from Spotify and use Google Play or whatever it's called, YouTube Music now, because it's included, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you pay whatever it is. It's quite expensive though. It's like over £10 a month, isn't it?
I think it's, well, the one I paid was £10 a month, and yeah. Mike in our chat room. Live listening, that's a strange way of phrasing that sentence. Mike, who's listening live in our chat room, says, "I've paid for YouTube for years. It's so good without the ads." And he's absolutely
I'm just finding it fatiguing at the moment, because not only do you have two YouTube ads at the beginning, probably two YouTube ads in the middle and more at the end, you also have to sit through 95 seconds of an influencer saying, "Today's episode is sponsored by Squarespace." And listen to an ad about Squarespace, which you've heard 50,000 times, for a service you're never going to use.
I use Squarespace.
Well, all right, you use Squarespace. I don't, and I never will. I'd rather build it with my own knuckles and fingers, scraping at the internals of HTML and gouging out the JavaScript of content.
Well, if you have a reasoned and levelled opinion, similar to that of Mr. Morris just a moment ago, you can send that to us in the form of an email. Ian is very special. He had a custom keyboard made. It's about the size of a piano, but it allows him to type angry messages using only his fists.
That's another great business idea.
Well, it certainly worked well for you, hasn't it, Chief? Mm. Whatever your method of input, you can send your hate and your comments to uktechshow@icloud.com. Grey's Anatomy, digital rights management on song downloads, South African apartheid, medieval witch burning, and computer animated Thomas the Tank Engine episodes.
Where's this going?
We all, Ian, have examples of things allowed to go on longer than they ever should. Another example, though, would be Adobe Flash. And much like Piers Morgan, Flash just doesn't belong in our world, and Microsoft is finally excising the software plugin from Windows 10, the final nail, I believe, in Flash's coffin, which follows Adobe announcing it had reached the end of its life back in December. Ian was writing about this week and said that Microsoft is going to remove Flash via an update, KB4577586, which I'm sure is rolling off tongues worldwide, which is going to roll out next month, according to a blog post. And not only will Flash be pulled from Windows 10, but it's also going to be killed from Windows 8.1, Server 2012, and Windows 8 Embedded. That's going to be through some security updates. This is not surprising, right, Ian? I mean, I kind of felt that that Adobe Flash was already dead.
Flash died a long time ago. Yeah, make no mistake. It's been out of every major browser for a really, really long time.
I think that's why I thought it was dead, because all the plugins have been disabled for a long time. But this is actually... this is the death of it built into Windows, or at least distributed with Windows, right?
Yeah, you could longer download a Flash video, or a Flash, whatever it's called, a file, I guess, would be the easiest way to describe it, and then FLV. Expect it to play in Windows. An FLV or an FLA.
Oh, what's FLA? Audio?
Maybe it was audio, I don't know.
I know that the FLVs were definitely video, because we used to upload all the CNET videos in FLV.
Well, it was SWF as well.
Oh, that was Shockwave though, Flash. Wasn't it?
Yeah. No, but that's the thing. It wasn't. And so I wrote about this in my article. So yeah. I've got this real problem. I seem incapable of just writing a straight news article and have to then reach into the guts of the internet to find, obscure details. But I used to work when I was at university. I used to do Macromedia Director projects, which is it's difficult to explain it to a modern audience. It's kind of like a fancy PowerPoint presentation, but programmed very specifically with a timeline, and you can script things and stuff like that. Like it had a programming language built in that was very basic, but quite easy to use. And that was the start of it. So Director was a CD-ROM tool, really. You'd make CD-ROMs and then they'd go out and people would use them. Some games used it. Flash was another company's product.
Yeah, and Adobe bought Swift Macromedia. Animator?
Yeah.
Swift?
I can't remember. I did read it earlier in the week. But
They rebranded it, didn't they?
Well, they did, yeah. So they bought Director.
They rebadged it, you fool.
So they had Director, but Director wasn't great for online because it tended to produce quite heavy files. And whilst it could do, what are they called? Vector graphics. It didn't at the start, I don't think. I certainly remember when I was using it, it wasn't really based around vector. So you'd basically end up using rasterized images, so a GIF or a JPEG, which meant that they were very, very big files. I did this presentation at university and it was like 500 or 600 megs, and this is back in 2000, so that's a huge amount of data, and you couldn't just put that on the internet. So Flash came along, Adobe bought it like they bought Macromedia, and it was very good because it was vector graphics, you could do animation, it was very straightforward, a lot of people really liked using it, it was very popular. I mean, obviously it's easy to bash it now, and I've read a lot of, people go, oh, it's rubbish, it was rubbish, and I saw some discussion about, I saw it somewhere, I can't remember where, people laughing at the idea that Adobe said that it was going to be huge or something. And it was huge. You can't appreciate, if you weren't around, if you're young, if you're under 30, you probably won't have any idea about how important Flash was back in the early days of the internet, because it was this massively lightweight way of producing absolutely brilliant interactivity. And this is before, you know, HTML5 was a thing, before you could have essentially web apps. You know, I'm looking at the show notes, they're in, you know, iCloud on Pages. This was something that just was not possible back in those days on the internet. So anything you had that was a bit more interactive was a showstopper. So Flash was very good. It was the right tool at the right time. It was a phenomenon for a really long time. Obviously, it had its time. And it was eclipsed by more modern technologies like HTML5. And Apple certainly did help speed that demise, I think, by literally refusing it anywhere near any iPhone and iPad.
Flash in my head, I mean, I have, like you, I have fond memories of Flash, because it did make, in particular, it made some of the early web animation hits very, very...
Weeble and Bob.
Badger. I'm thinking even earlier than that. I'm thinking, was it Camp Chaos? They did a whole load of Metallica parody videos when Metallica was suing Napster.
Oh.
With James Hetfield. And,
yeah, as a giant gorilla man.
Yeah, there were some very early ones. And I remember watching those and never thinking anything of it. It was just, you know, at the time it was great. But you know, looking back, we were all on dial-up modems.
Yeah.
And those were basically the streaming videos of the day, that and real video,
yeah,
which again was a brilliant technology for the time.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, the thing is that was what Flash became. Flash ended up being a video carrier, but there's no reason for that, because all Flash was doing sort of at the midpoint in its life, obviously when it started out, it was using codecs that were not, I don't want to say bespoke, because they weren't, but they had their own codecs that were wrapped in Flash. And then so Flash would provide the playback functionality. So you'd have controls that would enable you to stop and play and blah, blah, blah. But all they were doing was taking a video stream and streaming it progressively. Now, that might not sound like a big deal these days, because progressive video streaming is no big deal on broadband connections. But back in the day, you know, that was a relatively difficult thing to get right. You'd need to have, you know, you need to be very, very careful about how much data you were throwing at the connection. And Flash, I don't think, provided any real solution to that. It was just a way of delivering video. But it kind of short-sold the abilities of Flash, really, because it essentially just became how people watch video online, when realistically, actually, it was much more than that. But I guess HTML5 came along, and there was just no need for it anymore. You could do all that stuff in a dynamic web page without needing any external plugins.
My favorite reason for Flash to die is that it means that the websites of restaurants are now usable again. Because restaurants, more than any other industry, just had this addiction to designing everything in Flash. And if you wanted to find out what was on the menu, then you'd sure as hell better be on a PC with a decent connection and a graphics card. You know, good luck trying to load that in any other way. It was it was obscene.
Yeah, obviously. And I mean, you've got to remember as well that actually is a really good point from an accessibility perspective. Like, the early days of the web were not accessible for people with disabilities of any kind, and, you know, be that the ability to control a mouse or, you know, certain sight impairments. Flash didn't cater to those at all, particularly. And I remember when I worked at the BBC, it was one of the reasons it was very difficult to get something approved in Flash, because it wasn't accessible. And the BBC was always very, very thoughtful about accessibility, especially for blind readers. You'd might remember that, and I don't know how it does it anymore. I imagine there are better technological solutions, but a text-only version of the BBC website has always existed. Like, name another website that has a text-only version.
NPR.
It's difficult to come up with one. Well, all right, fair enough. But, you know, you see what I mean. It's not common, is it, for there to be just a text version?
No.
I think it's still there. I don't know if it's still provided by the same bit of back-end software that it used to be.
If you've got an opinion on Flash, if you have a memory of what it was like in the days before progressive video streaming, just package it up in a nice email, which has always been very simple to send across the internet. Just ask the Queen. She sent one of the first ones back in the 70s. Either way, send it to us, uktechshow@icloud.com.
You're used to hearing the smooth, velvet sound of Nate's voice drizzled over your ears like a warm eardrum syrup, topped off with the freshly squeezed citrus tang of an Ian Morris opinion. Supporters of the show at patreon.com/UKTech enjoy second helpings every week. So pull up a chair, find your nearest spoon, and tuck into a sumptuous extra helping with no commitment. If you have any allergies, please inform a waiter.
So it's time to jump into our mailbag, Ian. We had this come in from Mark, who's one of our patrons. He says, I was listening to the unedited text message 236 since I missed the start live. With regards to opening a bunch of new bank accounts, for example, Starling, Monzo, etc., Ian is right. There is an impact on credit score, but for what it's worth, the negative effect is very short-lived, typically 2 to 4 months in terms of opening new accounts. And in the longer term, there can actually be a slight positive effective impact. Typically, a more important thing is not to close your oldest bank account, since the oldest active account you have, the better your score. If you guys do have any more questions on this, let me know, as this is basically what I do in my day job. Great show as always, Mark. Yeah,
we could have done with Mark's help when I had my Virgin Media snafu.
Yeah, well, for anyone who wasn't listening to our live show last week or our unedited version on Patreon, I was talking about having opened a Starling bank account to sort of trial it out, and Ian was worried it was going to have a negative impact on my credit score, but apparently, probably not.
No.
And my original Halifax from when I was 8 years old is still active, so hopefully that's why I don't seem to have any problems with credit. Well, thanks for that very much, Mark. I'll tell you someone who doesn't talk as much about credit scores as we have just done. It's Tom Merritt over at Daily Tech News Show, and he's here to tell us what we've been missing in the wider world of tech this week. I'm guessing Apple and Epic. It's been on everybody's lips.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, Nate was here talking about the fate of Yahoo. We had several revelations from the Epic Apple trial, like Walmart's planned gaming service and why Microsoft's game streaming can't work like Netflix. That confused the judge. We also talk about AI that can make movie dubs better. Dr. Nicole Ackermans explains 3D imaging tech tools. NASCAR's new tech standards and Twitter's tip jar are in there as well. All that and much more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
He's absolutely right. I was on DTNS last week.
Yes.
Thank you, Tom. Yeah, I mean, the Epic Apple stuff we haven't covered on this show. I did record an episode of Extra Message for patrons in a forest next to a giant goose, which got a mention in the show. That went out earlier in this week, and I did share my thoughts there on what the trial revealed about App Store advertising and charts within those app stores. Patrons can, of course, get that now. Otherwise, listen to DTNS. They're doing a great job of covering the day-to-day happenings in the courtroom in the United States. Ian, I think that's going to do it for now. Is there anything else?
Fabulous.
Anything I've missed?
No.
Okay. Good. Jolly good, then. Thanks, everybody, for listening live. We'll be back next week. And thanks to our patrons for backing us as well. And for all of those patrons who are joining us in our live chat room. It's been a lot of fun. With all that said, see you in a week's time.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.